Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's up? This is DeJuan Boyd, a.k.a. DJ Rabbit, representing Rabbit Productions, hanging out chilling with my girl, Cy Buggy. That's right, Cy Brown, right here on LifeRemixedRadio.com. Say word.
Hey, everybody, it's your girl, Cy Brown, and welcome to Life Remixed Radio. Today, we are joined by DeJuan Colleon, who joins us every single Thursday for our weekly Ecclesia Bible study. Today, we are talking about the spiritual significance of an Obama presidency. So we sent this out on Twitter. I sent it out on Twitter, and I'm just so happy to say I hit my 500th, I don't know if that's the right way to say it, my 500th or 100th follower yesterday, so I'm very, very excited about that. Thank you for everybody who is trusting me with their inbox and trusting me with access to their cell phone by following me on Twitter. So I hold that very near and dear, and I will not send you stuff that just says, good morning, I promise you on that one. But I do want to say thank you for following me. Before we get into today's show, I'm going to make it really brief because this is a very, very informative show. My grandmother was so touched yesterday when everybody called, you know, we were in the chat room. My grandmother called in. She's 87 years old, and my uncle Leroy, we all were on the phone laughing when I dialed his house, and my cousin Kate, his wife, answered the phone, and he shared with us how he felt about the candidacy and upcoming presidential significance of Barack Obama being our president. So just to hear from a woman who's 87, my uncle who's 92, yesterday was a very touching show, and we even had my son, who's 19, talk about what the presidency, the impending presidency of Barack Obama, means to him at 19 years old. And one thing transcended all opinions is that they were all optimistic and they were all hopeful. And my grandmother and my uncle in particular stressed the relationship with God that Barack Obama must have to be able to ascend to where he is and where he's on his way to. So just big ups to everybody who followed me, who tuned in yesterday and heard me chit-chatting with my grandmother, my uncle, and my son. It was a very touching show, and my grandmother is still crying. She's been crying since yesterday. I actually had to go see her last night. She called me actually like 11:15, and she said, Saeed, I can't stop crying. I said, I know, Grandma. I'm preparing for my show at 12. I'll call you when I get off the air. So, I mean, this is very, very touching to everybody, and the significance is, it just gives me the chills thinking about it. But, you know, and I do want to say I'm on day two of trading in my cynicism for a life of hope and possibilities. And I shared with everyone yesterday how I am trying my darndest to lose that level of cynicism that I do have and that rests so deeply within me and trade that in for hope and possibilities. Because, you know, life can beat you up, and a lot of people can become a cynic. So I'm just very happy that everyone's joining us. On that note, I'm going to bring our facilitator in for the day. DeJuan, are you with us, buddy?
Yes.
Tell everybody who you are so we can get right into this conversation today, because today is going to be a very good show as we talk about the spiritual significance of Barack Obama.
Okay, this is DeJuan Colleon. I guess I don't really like talking about myself that much, so you can go to my blog. It has a lot of different information about what I do, what I've done. It's ecclesia.blogspot.com, and that's E-K-K-L-E is in Edward, SIAATL.blogspot.com.
I just put it in the chat.
And, right? I mean, I'm really glad to be here. It's a very significant time in all Americans' lives. I mean, when you think back to the people that I would think that are more deserving to actually to see this historical moment take place, whether it's Coretta Scott King or Martin Luther King or Sojourner Truth, Rosa Parks, so many different people who have contributed to where we are today, who didn't get the opportunity to cast the ballot, who didn't get the opportunity to stay up all night and watch the election unfold. But we just have to count ourselves thankful and blessed to be able to see, you know, will actually being carried out on the earth.
Thank you. Let's get right into today's show. We have a lot of guests. I just want to acknowledge some people that are in the chat room. Hello to Dropping Seed Radio, The High Road, and True View. These are people that are with me every single day, and I thank you for tuning in and your obedience. But we have a lot of guests that have tuned in, so let's get right into it. Want to make sure that they get the information and that this show satisfies a query that they may have about this very important and significant topic.
Yes, and before I get started, I definitely want to give a shout-out, bless-out to my wife and kids who are probably logging on at home, checking out the show. So,
yay.
You know, doing that. But basically, this show, the spiritual significance of a Barack Obama presidency, throughout the course of 2 years or more, you've heard so much about Barack Obama, and then the perspective of where I'm going to come from. As a Christian, a lot of Christians, you know, kind of vacillated, going back and forth between can they vote for this man or should they vote for this man. And then as, you know, the election progressed, as the primaries progressed from Hillary Clinton versus Barack Obama to him getting to, you know, the general election against John McCain, what I noticed is there was just this pervasive amount of information that was put out that a Barack Obama presidency could mean the signaling of the Antichrist, or he could be the Antichrist, or it's bad. And there were just so many implications or subtleties or things that were implied by having, you know, Barack Obama be president. And it kind of made me sit back and think, because on the surface level, you know, as a Christian, you know, the Bible implores us to cover and pray for all of our leaders. Even in Jesus' day, you know, he rendered unto Caesar what was Caesar. You know, whether it was Nero or Caesar, or they were always told to pray for their leaders. Even Nebuchadnezzar, a Babylonian king, he was extremely pagan, worship other gods. God still used him to do his work, and people still had to have reverence. So when you look at what happened and what transpired, I just noticed that even though John McCain professed to be a Christian and George Bush professed to be a Christian and Hillary Clinton professed to be a Christian, and Barack Obama was the only person whose Christianity was always coming into question.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, I kept wondering, why is that? Is it because of what he looks like, the complexion of his skin? But you have to go back to the very origins of the church itself in this country. The church in itself has always been an institution that was used to reinforce classism and racism and slavery. And so there was always this thing about black not being good, whether it's Black Monday or just all the connotations that go along with being black. So even in the context of the early church and slave times, you know, the white masters, the white preachers would allow black preachers to come preach. And, you know, the black preachers would reinforce the same message that the white preachers would preach, which was, you know, be obedient, do what your masters tell you to do, and you won't get the lash, you won't get whipped. And then later on, the black preachers, when they would get their time, they would reinforce the same thing. And, you know, the slaves that were allowed to attend church who would come to the white churches sometimes and sit up in the balcony in the back, they were always programmed not to go against the status quo that, you know, black people, especially in the South, Tennessee, Alabama, all the whole former Confederacy that voted Republican or quote-unquote red states, they all basically voted Republican with the exception of, I believe, Florida. You know, there's this deep-seated racism or segregation that's always been correlated with black people and their place in society and their role in society. So you're challenged with the whole concept, okay, well, now we have an African-American, and he says he's a Christian, and why is he not getting the same validation or the same support from the Christian community as any other person in the last 20 years that's run for president that said they were a Christian? was getting. So there was this whole ordeal made about his name, Barack Obama. It's a funny name. It's a Muslim name. But so what you have to do is do some research. If you go to the book of Judges, chapter 4, it talks about a Barack. It's spelled B-A-R-A-K, which you got to understand, even if Barack Obama's name came from a Muslim origin, it was a Semitic origin. Ishmael was a descendant of Abraham, which was the father of Judaism and Muslim, Islam and Christian roots. So Barack is a Semitic name. So it's if you understand that culture and if you understand what that means, the name itself comes from something that was used by God. And actually, when you go back and look at it, if you have a concordance, a Strong's concordance, it's the word, the Hebrew word for Barak actually means blessed. And the word blessed occurs 317 times in the Bible and 289 scriptures. So from the onset, for Christians to come out and mock and belittle and try to devalue or scare people to think they're voting for the Antichrist or they're voting for the end of the world, and they're it's very sinister, because you can't, when you look at the greater context of it, you can't go against what God has blessed. The guy's name is Barak, which means blessed, and that comes from the very beginning in Genesis, where God blessed them and told them to be fruitful and to multiply and subdue the earth. His middle name, Hussein, in Aramaic, which is the language that Jesus spoke, means good. So you look at his whole name, it's blessed the good. So if you go back to Judges chapter 4, if you look at the historical context, where in this story the children of Israel are, they had a good leader whose name, you know, I really can't pronounce. It's E-H-U-D. So all y'all are good with phonetics, y'all can pronounce his name. But he was the leader, and he was a good leader of Israel, and he was dead. And the whole country just got into disarray. They fell away from God. They started doing their own thing. They started worshiping other idols. They started going after other cultures and adopting themselves. They were in a crisis, no different than we are today, no different than the American situation, the Western culture. If you look at Judges chapter 4, the children of Israel were in a similar type crisis. They had a crisis in leadership, which caused the whole country to fall off. So at that time, Deborah was a judge. She was instructed to reach out to Barak, because the children of Israel, they were all crying out to Jehovah, we need help, we're in trouble, we're in disarray, and we're being, you know, encamped around by our enemies. There's so many different issues that we're dealing with. We need someone to come and help us, you know, get past this impasse. So Judges, in the book of Judges, Deborah is a judge, and she's a spiritual woman. She deals directly with God, and she reaches out to Barak, and Barak didn't want to undertake, you know, his cause unless he knew she was going to be with him, because he knew that God was with her. So once she went ahead to decide to go with him, to make a long story short, Barak, under his leadership, they were able to drive out all the enemies and bring back prosperity and bring back order back to the nation of Israel. So I see it as no coincidence that you can see that same parallel in Judges chapter 4, if you have time to read the entire chapter to understand that. But to go back to the whole idea of Barack Obama and his name, because so much has been made of it. You know, biblically, names are very important. Names pretty much, you can tell everything about somebody with their name, their character, their destiny, what they are predestined to do. That's why it was so important that God had to change Jacob's name to Israel. He had to change Saul's name to Paul. That's why when Jesus was born, they had a name already for him. Even when John the Baptist, the prophet that was supposed to make the way known for Christ, Jesus Christ, his father couldn't even name him. God made sure that he had the name John so that it would, you know, lay the foundation of his destiny of what he was supposed to do. So the whole thing about Barack Obama and his name and he's Semitic and all of that, it's not something new. If you look in history, we've had 14 presidents of this country, of the 43 that we have thus far, that have had Semitic names. Benjamin Franklin, one of our most noted and heroes of this country, he has a Semitic name. If you look at, let's look at John Adams. He was one of our presidents, and his name, as I stated, comes from John, which is a Semitic name, which basically says, hold on one second, basically tells his whole history that hello?
Yeah, D, you okay?
Yeah, I'm breaking up. Hold on one second.
I hear you clearly. I hear you very well.
But basically, back to what I was saying, when you look at the history of our presence in this country, John Adams, which comes from the Hebrew name Yuchanan, which means John, which is a gift of God, and Adam, which means human being. So he's just one of the 14 presidents that have the Semitic name. So when people have made this big ordeal about his name, it's based out of ignorance, and you can make your own, you know, reference or imply that it maybe comes from deep-seated racism or their own personal problems that they may have by having to deal with having an African-American president.
I'm listening to everything you're saying, but even in my walk, as I'm sharing with people the concept of what we're talking about here, just before the show, I was talking to a friend of mine, and he was like, come on, Si, he's just a man. Don't read more into this. What are you doing? It's not that serious. How do we I don't want to say justify our belief or justify our faith, but I felt this way for a while, that there's something about this person, even while I was doubting and questioning and being extremely cynical of his candidacy. But now that I'm at a different place and I really feel there is a spiritual significance, what do we say to people that are like, well, you know, sorry, come on, he's just a man. What, are you nuts? Or do we just let that go and just keep on believing what we believe?
Well, what I'm saying with this, I'm not trying to paint him out to be anything. All I'm doing is, you know, laying out the facts, because so many
mm-hmm.
people have said so many different things. First of all, with all, you know, sincerity, I'm not, you know, advocating or saying that Barack Obama is some type of prophet, he's some type of angel, he's some type of Messiah figure. I'm not saying any of that. As a person that was skeptical myself, you know, of all the hype and hoopla and hysteria around him, that's not what I'm saying. But what I'm doing with this is trying to make the clarification of, you know, when you look at a lot of these different Christian groups or famous pastors or different
mm-hmm.
people, they have been very, very slow or very reluctant. And in many ways, if you look at the blogs and you look at news stories, they've been very hostile towards this man. And I don't understand it. So what I'm trying to do is basically lay out the facts. Biblically, as a Christian, you know, according to Psalm 75:5, that God is the one that puts up, and he's the one that sets down, as far as it says promotion doesn't come from the east or the west, but it comes from God. So therefore, if you're a Christian and Barack Obama wins or George Bush wins or whomever, that's something that God is the one ordaining it. You can't, if you just think, you know, Barack Obama is the Antichrist and he's bringing all this doom and he's just, it's as if they think he just removed God out the throne and out the equation, and he's doing this on his own, so we got to pray against it. Well, that's not even biblical. There's no, you don't have any biblical precedence to be praying against your leaders. Even if you look at Daniel 2, verse 20, it says God is the one that removes kings and he sets up kings. I mean, he is the one that controls the times and the seasons. I mean, I could just go through different scriptures that these same Christians or people that wrestle with this issue should have a better understanding of, so it wouldn't be this type of anxiety when you are looking at who you may vote for in the future or just leadership or politics. It says in Daniel 4:17 that God, the Most High, rules the kingdom of men. He gives it to whomever he will and set up it and sets up over those kingdoms even the basis of men. So even if he wants to put somebody that's the most terrible person in the world over a particular region or territory or empire, he can do that. And I'm not saying that's what Barack Obama is, but what it is, the backlash that I've seen just in Christianity about this man, I think exposes a lot more about the Christians that do this type of behavior, because I've been on websites where they have abomination and all they do is continue trying to criticize and pick and find any little thing that they think he's doing that doesn't line up with scripture, whereas you can look at any candidate and do the same thing, but they just don't do it. Just like, you know, we've had a conversation about abortion or gay rights. Those are just two things. They may be two commandments. What about the other eight commandments? Why is there not the same passion and stand for the other commandments? Even in the New Testament, Christ said the greatest commandment is that you love your neighbor as yourself. So if you juxtapose that with a platform that says we don't want to redistribute wealth, we only want the top 5% to have wealth and everybody else, you get in where you fit in. That goes against the greatest commandment, which is to love your neighbor as yourself, because the Bible says the strong should bear the infirmities of the weak. So you can't have you can't look at your Bible as some type of buffet and pick and choose which way, you know, which commandments or sins that you're going to stand by and the other ones you're going to let slide, and then go to the polls and vote and say, well, this candidate is going to be for abortion, so I'm not going to vote for him. Now, and then you're going to ignore the other things like adultery and fornication that the other candidates participate in or their children have participated in, and then they bring their children on stage and say, premarital sex is fine, it's great, it's cool, look, my daughter.
Could you be talking about, like, Sarah Palin?
Maybe, possibly. I don't want to give her any more press. She just needs to go away, go back, get herself together, figure out what the seven continents are first before she comes back
on. Can you believe
that
she – I didn't mean to cut you. Can you believe she didn't know about Africa?
Hey,
I was shocked when I read that today. Everybody – Sarah Palin doesn't even have a basic understanding. You know what? I'm not even going to go that way. But anyway, just look it up, everybody. She didn't even know if Africa was a continent or a country. Let me just read some stuff in the chat room. True View said, who I absolutely adore, I blogged on that. I said, people cannot take anyone as a messiah. He is a man that was appointed to be president. I don't think it has truly hit me, the magnitude of his presidency. True, I have this to tell you. I was the biggest anti-Obama person you could think of, because I was looking at it from a purely intellectual perspective. From an intellectual perspective, I said, and I wrote in the book Politics Remix, that he was an unseasoned politician that should wait his turn. And I did feel that way for a very long time. But I think we cannot negate the fact that he is changing people. And let me expound on that just a little bit, Dee, and then I want to have your opinion on the other side of my comments. I thought Barack Obama was full of empty words and a talking puppet for whoever the spooky, fictitious people that put him up to it was. And, Dee, I remember even having this conversation with you like a month or 2 months ago. But when you really look at the way this man has united nations, when I saw Republicans voting for this guy, Republicans publicly coming out in support, you know, politics and religion are two of the most divisive things to talk about in our country. Barack Obama is uniting people across party affiliation. He's uniting people across race. He is uniting people across continents. Did you see people jumping for joy at this man? And yeah, and I said man for a reason. I understand he is just a man, but I always say that God touches every baby as the baby's being born. I think I heard somebody say this one time. But on some babies, he leaves his hands on just a little bit longer. He must have left his hands on Barack when he was coming out of the womb for like an hour or something, because this man really is uniting people of all races, all ages. Roland Martin said on CNN yesterday, this man can speak to somebody who's 106 years old and somebody who's 19. I told you all, my son was on the show yesterday and was amped about voting. I asked him yesterday, Daquan, how did you feel about voting? He was like, yo, I felt good. I said, what do you think about, you know, the impending presidency of Barack Obama? He's like, yo, it might be some more opportunities for us. And yesterday my uncle was on the show. My uncle, who's 92, is saying the exact same thing as my 19-year-old. This man speaks to people across age barriers, racial lines, geographic lines. This is the epitome of a uniter, and the way it was explained to me is that, Saida, the significance of Barack Obama has absolutely nothing to do with the election. It has to do with the fact that the world is in turmoil, and he is the one that has been sent to fix it. And y'all could take it for what it's worth. And I touched on this on the show about a month ago, and I didn't elaborate. But you can't deny Tuesday night when he won. Thousands upon thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people, millions of people tuning in, standing out in the rain, standing out in the cold, cheering. I mean, I was at a party and there was people like, yo, this is for the streets. Yo, this is for my hood. People standing up to take their rightful place. There's got to be something said about that. Dee, what do you say about that?
Well, I just, you know, like I said, from a Christian perspective, it's just mind-numbing to me that people have gone all out of their way to try to, you know, make his presidency or the fact of his imminent presidency seem to be a bad thing. And I think what that is all implied to something deeper, as far as the problems and the issues they may have with racism or classism in this country, and they try to cloak it in something spiritual, and that's mm-hmm. what the church has always done. Whether it was back in the day with slavery, they tried to cloak it in something spiritual, that the mm-hmm. slaves would obey their masters so they could go to heaven. It's the same thing today. It's just, you know, you have quite a few, you know, churches or well-meaning pastors or quote-unquote leaders in Christianity that think this is the worst thing that's ever happened, when they're not really looking at it for what it is. At the end of the day, God is the one that raises up leaders and puts people in. It says in Proverbs that the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord, and like as the rivers of water, he turns it whichever way he wants to, according to his will. So it doesn't, you know, you can't get caught up and all this spooky talk that people try to attach to something, because at the end of the day, God is in control. He is sovereign. And what you have to look at, if God would send somebody to this country whose name means bless and the good, you know, I would think based on everything we have going on in this country, from a mortgage crisis, banking crisis, fighting wars on two or three different fronts, and all the healthcare situation, the AIDS pandemic, you would think we would want a blessing. But instead, people don't want the blessing because of what package it comes in. And that goes back to the way it was when Jesus Christ came. They wanted a king. They wanted a Messiah, but they didn't want it in that package. They wanted him to send somebody else with a little more status, a little more swag about himself, somebody that came from a better background so they could be, you know, more accepting towards that. And, you know, we have to be careful because it says in the book of Samuel 1:15, it says, for rebellion is the sin of witchcraft and stubbornness. It is considered as iniquity and idolatry because thou hast rejected the word of the Lord. So, you know, when God sends a word or sends somebody with his word and you reject it, it's basically you're rejecting him. And, you know, we could, it could have been a situation where we could have, you know, turned away a possible blessing simply because of our own, you know, racial prejudices or our classisms that we struggle and deal with.
Well, the Bible does say never cease to entertain strangers because they may be angels. And I was speaking with someone yesterday who said, wouldn't it be awful if this guy really was the real deal, but because we didn't like what he looked like, what his family looked like, what his we turned him away? I don't want to be that way. And that's why I said at the top of the show, as of Tuesday, I laid my cynicism down for hope and possibilities, because at this point, I cried not because a black man was elected president, because I believe he is a person, but I cried because here is somebody who was only a senator for like a year, just over that, barely, before he had the audacity to think he could become president. And when he won Iowa, he just bettered himself. He got more money, kept going. He bettered himself, got more money, kept going. And when he won 11 contests in a row on February 5th, that's what made me stand up and take notice. And when Hillary Clinton bowed down to this man, I said, you know what? There's got to be more to this. And when he gave his acceptance speech Tuesday night, I stood there frozen. It was almost like something out of a movie where everyone is around jumping and screaming, and I stood there still. I told you guys, I was in a party, and they had it on the big jumbotron, like a big, they took a big square, and it was a big, huge white square from the ceiling, so no matter where you were in the club, you could look up and see it. And everybody's going, wow, yay, the crowd. And I'm standing there frozen like, yo, this man is now our president. Barring race, barring economics, barring any of that, he started from obscurity where nobody even knew who he was. My grandmother said that yesterday. She said he has to be from God because he came out of nowhere. And when you listen to old people, the wisdom of our elders, and you really look at it, I had to stop looking at the candidacy and future presidency of Barack Obama with my intellect, using my intellect. I attended a church named Hillside Chapel and Truth Center in Atlanta, right on Cascade Road. And I remember sitting in service years ago, and Dr. Barbara said, too many of us have gotten smart. We all went to college and think we know anything, but when it comes to your relationship with God, you've got to put all your wisdom aside and just accept him for who he is. And that was some of the best advice I ever got, because I always look through things from an intellectual perspective. I overanalyze, I want to assess, I want to see, I want to feel, I want to prod. And that's where cynicism, I believe that's the place of the source of cynicism, your intellect, which is the antithesis of what having a good relationship with God is all about. You have to take it for what it is and lay your intellect and lay your cynicism aside. There's got to be something to this guy. For what it is, I don't care what people think, you cannot ignore the fact that this man is uniting people across every possible self-imposed barrier we've given ourselves. And I believe if we all look for the light, and Tiff, you know, you and I, Tiff is one of my listeners too, who's always in the chat room. Tiff, you and I talk about our energy and our light. If we really focus on wanting to be the light in the world, and that's part of what Dewan talked about last week when we were talking about Halloween, lightness and darkness, how can this guy not be part of the light when he's been able to transform lives? And he's only been on the scene nationally for 2.5 years. Dee, what do you think?
Well, the whole point that when you're saying he came out of nowhere, another definition or usage of meaning of the word Barack is lightning or flash of lightning. And we know lightning appears out of nowhere. bam, it's right there. So I think there are a lot of spiritual truths that you can derive from Barack Obama being, you know, president-elect. But at the same time, I have to reiterate and stress that he is a man just like anybody else. He just has a call to do X, Y, Z, no different than George Bush or King David or Jimmy Carter or Pharaoh. They all were men that had their destiny or their role was to do and be a leader for a particular time to carry out what God had them to carry out. As it stated, the king's heart is in God's hands and to do his will, whatever that may be, whether he's good or bad. It's the sovereignty of God. I think people put all this mysticism and they add to it because they see, something extraordinary about somebody. But you can apply that to anybody. The fact that you're on the air and you're doing the show, you know, you didn't do that within yourself. God allowed you to do that. That's something God empowered you to do, just like the people that are blessed and fortunate enough to have children. They were blessed to have children. You got a lot of people who can't have children. So
right.
God, no different than with Barack Obama, his hand is on him. God's hand is on everybody and in everything. All things work for the good of those who love the Lord. So therefore, whatever it is that you're doing, it may not be broadcast worldwide, globally, and it may not be, you know, on blast on your favorite news station, but there are things that you know that only you can do that you're being empowered by God to do, and you know deep down, you know, you wouldn't have the ability to do it if God didn't bless you with the ability to do it, if he didn't open the doors for you to do it, if he didn't give you the opportunities to do it. So the thing is, I think what you don't want to do with anybody, whether it's Barack Obama or your pastor or an athlete or a rapper or a business person, start getting carried away because you see some a favor of God or some, you know, super being put on their natural abilities. So then you start worshiping and following the person instead of the creator or God that is empowering them to do what they were ordained to do from the very beginning. So, I mean, that's what you have to look at. You gotta look at God first and foremost and not the person. I mean, everybody was just so, you know, taken aback and going crazy about Michael Phelps winning all those Olympic medals. But, you know, he was made to swim. You look at his body, you look at it, you know, you listen to his story. That's all he talked about. That's all he ever did. That's what God empowered him to do. So what you don't do, you don't get so sidetracked. You start worshiping the person. They're only doing what God has called them to do. And so everybody has, you know, that opportunity to be empowered to do whatever it is they're supposed to do on this earth. Like Martin Luther King, his job was to lead several, you know, thousands of people to get to a point where you had a Voters' Right Act in 1965 so that we can vote. You look at Elder Bernice King and those children, her siblings, Dexter and Martin III, you know, they had to pay the price so that you could have a movement of people be able to get the right to vote so that we could elect and vote a black president. And, you know, we forget about that. I mean, we forget about after Reconstruction, after the Civil War, that, you know, you had black senators and black people in legislative positions. We had all full suffrage rights, but then because of states' rights, you know, they took back all the rights, especially in the South, that black people had gained after the Civil War, and, you know, we lost everything. And you had several different people that worked to fight to bring that back. You know, you had somebody like a Dr. John Cash in out of Alabama that, you know, went down to Birmingham and worked with Reverend Abernathy and Martin Luther King, and he fought against George Wallace and the Dixiecrats and founded the National Democratic Party, a party that allowed black people to be able to vote for national candidates, because in the South, especially in Alabama, they weren't putting all the names on the ballot. They weren't allowing black people to vote for national candidates. So that's a person a lot of people may not have heard of, but him and his family paid a great price to get to where we are. And just as the King children have paid a great price to allow their father to do what he did to get to where we are, to where we can wake up and have an African-American president elect. And that was all part of a long 400-year process to which God ordained to happen. So you don't want to get so enamored with the person that is allowed to walk in something, but you have to look at God, who is the one, the author of all these things.
Tiff made a very valid point in the chat. I mean, the chat room is very busy. I just copied it, and I'm probably going to be posting a lot of this stuff from the chat room on the blog. Tiff said, I didn't hear anything that speaks to my soul, and I put Tiff, keep listening, because something with Barack Obama touches everybody. I'm very convinced of that. It could be the fact that he's tall. He's speaking to tall people. It can be that he's of mixed heritage. He can be speaking to mixed heritage. He can say, you know, I'm going to, you know, be of service and you go to college for free. He's now speaking to my son. Let's look, Tiff, and I'm a conspiracy theorist like you, Tiff, and you know we've talked about this hundreds of times, but for one time in your life, I'm asking everybody, put your cynicism away just for a second. Give the guy a chance just for a second. Read his speeches. Read his blog. Read his website. There's a great book that's out called Barack in His Own Words, and it's a really short book, probably written for students or something, where it's excerpts from his speeches. And follow all of that information. Do your homework. To all my intellectuals, do your homework. And I don't believe you have to, and I've said this, tap dance behind anybody and just blindly follow. And that's what angered me so much with black people, because I felt black people were just following behind Barack because he's black. I said he never spoke to our issues. He never spoke directly to us. Hillary Clinton spoke to women. John McCain and Sarah Palin spoke to their constituents. And Barack Obama even spoke to the homosexual community. He spoke to women. He never once, I believe, and I still feel to a certain degree, spoke to the plight of African Americans. However, if we really look at what he's doing, let's look past his words and look at his actions. Who has been able to unite people? We are going to come up. We are going to do better just by the sheer fact that everybody is becoming united and following behind an idea that we can actually hope and dream for a better place again. And I slighted that because of my intellect. I was looking for facts and figures and anecdotes and solutions, and you all know who listen to me every day. I am that analytical person. I want something tangible and concrete. I don't want a politician who's going to sell me something. But how can we deny thousands of people, nations upon nations? This is nation building, not what George Bush has done with this war. Nation building is what Barack Obama is doing. He is restoring nations by restoring people. Yes, he's a politician, as you know, Biomed just said in the chat room, but true nation building starts with people building, and what he's doing is building up people, especially our black men. And once he continues, if we support him in building people, how can we not, or how can we discount the impact that this man is making around the world, not just New Jersey or Brooklyn or the Southeast region or to evangelicals or to gun-toting Bible believers in Pennsylvania, people, the souls and hearts and spirits and minds of people. This is so much bigger than us, and it has nothing to do with the election.
Yeah, and I would like to add, if you know, I think everybody tries to look and see what does it mean to them, or what's the value of it. But even if, you know, Barack Obama doesn't do anything specifically for black people, there's no legislation specifically that deals with, you know, the elements of black culture. What you have to be able to look at when we, from a big picture perspective, is the fact that when we came to this country, we couldn't have a family. Black men couldn't have a family. A lot of families were separated. Children were separated from their parents. Black men were used to just breed families but not necessarily be able to stay together as a unit. And then to see, you know, something that a lot of people think in their mind can't happen, which is succeed all the way to the top with a black woman, because a lot of black men, sometimes they make a little money, get a little paper, and they want to go to the other side and think that's going to help them to be more successful. And I'm not knocking relationships, if that's your flavor and that's what, if that's a genuine situation, then that's cool. But then there's a lot of people who do it to try to think that's going to help them get to the top. Or where you can look at Barack Obama and see, this brother made it to the top. There is not another position that you can get higher than the president of the free world. And he did it with a black wife, and he has, you know, two kids by him and his wife, and it's a complete unit. Despite everything that happened over 400 years to divide that unit, that's a testament that you can have a complete unit. You can be a nuclear family and be successful and get all the way to the top. So if there's nothing else you can take from that, I would implore people to look at that and apply that and take that from the situation.
Well, let's look at it. Imagine if Sasha or Malia was unmarried and pregnant. He wouldn't have. My cynicism, here's where my cynicism came from. He's too perfect. You know, we're always looking for something. And I was, and I'm not ashamed or embarrassed to say it. I was looking for something. I'm like, yo, this dude is handsome. Went to the top college, was president of the Harvard Law Review, has a fly wife, she's tall, polished, they have great-looking kids. He speaks well. He has a nice sweat. Like, something's
not
right.
What does his name mean? What does his name mean?
Blessed and good.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, you know, go figure. My name is Saida. That means happy-go-lucky. I guess my mother was right on target when she named me that. My grandmother, I think, is still mad that my mother didn't name me, like, Monique or something. But my mother named me Saida, which is about as Arabic as you can get. My mother's name is Khadija Alia Akmal. You cannot get any more Arabic than that. So I think there is something entrenched in what we name our children. Something is definitely there. But, oh, wait, we just got a question from Dropping Seed Radio, Pastor Montan McDonald. What is your definition of showing strength? Well, I'll tell you mine, and Dee, I would love for you to answer. My definition of showing strength is that this man was not moved by any outside influences. He stuck to his core competency, and that was that. He was not a tree branch that blew in the wind. He was the tree trunk that was stable, firm, and unmovable.
Yeah, I mean, I would just add to that, showing strength is being consistent over time, diligent, whether it's Jesus Christ going through 30 years of doing whatever his father asked him to do, going to school, learning from, you know, the Sanhedrin and becoming, you know, a priest, and then going all the way to the cross. Strength is being disciplined, showing being dedicated and not wavering from it, whether it's Barack Obama staying out of trouble, not doing this, not doing that, not being provoked by Hillary Clinton to act out and act crazy. And, you know, it's Martin Luther King telling people, I don't care what happens, I don't care if you get hit with a brick or dogs jump on you, we got to stay disciplined, we got to stay dedicated, we got to stay committed to the cause. So, you know, even if you look at Harriet Tubman, you know, I'm free, but I'm going to keep going back several times to get a lot of other people free, despite I might get caught or what it might cost me. So it's about being dedicated and disciplined and committed and diligent over a long period of time, which I could say is a definition of a show of strength.
All right. Let's just touch something really quickly. Annie says that he must show the same strength that he showed us to world leaders, not sitting down with Ahmadinejad without preconditions. First of all, he's going to sit and talk to him. He's going to sit and talk to him, whether it's preconditions or not preconditions. Just the fact that he's entertaining the thought of having a conversation with people that hate you opens up the door for dialogue. Now, we don't know what's going to come of it, but it's at least it's better than him standing in a room with his arms folded and going, I'm not talking to him. He's not my friend. That's what they do at the playground at 5 years old. And I keep hearing you guys saying with no preconditions. I think sometimes you have to be willing to be vulnerable. And I think the ability to show that you're slightly vulnerable will open you up to more opportunities than going into delicate situations with such a firm hand. Because Bush took a firm stance, rolled the dice, and lost. And we were vulnerable anyway because we were attacked. I think there's nothing wrong with Barack Obama saying, listen, you guys are mad at us, we're mad at you, stuff ain't right. Can we at least sit down and talk about it? Just what if this turns out to be the right thing? I don't know. I'm hopeful. What were you going to say?
Oh, go ahead. Close to the chat room.
Real quick in the chat room, it says, but face-to-face will be used as propaganda by our enemies. Condoleezza Rice is brilliant at this. I have very little respect for Condoleezza Rice. Until I do more research and it's proven otherwise, I am not a fan of hers, so I'm not even going to speak on that. This is really about the spiritual significance of Barack Obama.
Well,
President,
what you got? Everybody that's in the chat room, you have to understand all that face-to-face and preconditions, that's all semantics.
Yes.
I mean, America has been dialoguing with both sides of every conflict for years. I mean, they were dialoguing with Iran and funding Iraq. That's all semantics. We talk to everybody. I mean, Ahmadinejad has been on CNN. I believe he got interviewed by Larry King. So if you're not going to dialogue with somebody, why would you allow him to come to America? He went to D.C., toured D.C. I saw him on my TV. So It's semantics. Don't fall for the okey-doke, you know. There are always conversations going on, you know. So you have to – you just have to be whoever – the administration just has to know what they're doing and how they're doing it and the pros and cons and the ramifications of what channel they decide to dialogue on, but don't be fooled to think that there's no dialogue going on.
Yeah, this is true too. I just want to say a couple things. Annie says, Sai, we can agree to disagree. I just want to clarify something. I'm not a fan of Condoleezza Rice for personal reasons. She has said some things that are just so, to me, off. Like, I read in an article one time she said she never experienced racism. Condoleezza Rice grew up in the South in the 50s and 60s. What planet did she live on where she never experienced racism? I mean, that was just an ignorant thing to say. And just following her, she just has said some of the dumbest things. I just heard some of the most ignorant things come out of her mouth. I will never, however, slight her accomplishments. Her accomplishments are spot on. What she has been able to achieve as a black woman, we cannot take that away from her. What she has been able to accomplish as a person, we cannot take that away from her. I just think she's, you know, I just don't dig her for some of the things that she said personally that just baffle me. But that's it. Anyway, she says your speaker is right on. It's semantic. Dropping Seed, who's from Tennessee, said it is semantics. And that's exactly what you were saying, Dee, that it's just semantics. This, you know, little minuscule details that need to be worked out. And I'm very happy and honored that he's at least willing to engage in a conversation, be it enemies or not. How can you bring an ultimate resolution with your enemy if you're not even willing to engage in a conversation? Let's just say have your people meet my people. Do something. But if you're not willing to even engage in a conversation, then there's no chance for any type of resolution. And it can't go on forever. I've pissed off so many clients, many, just because of stupid things that I've done, misunderstandings. But you know something? I've gone back because I don't want to leave a bad relationship. I've tried to remedy uncomfortable situations. But if a person goes around pissing people off and not trying to fix situations or trying to remedy situations, then it's never going to get fixed. Your reputation gets worse and worse, and you're out of business. So let's just be happy that he's willing to even say, let me holler at you for a minute.
Yeah, I mean, even in a biblical context, the devil is still allowed to go up to heaven and accuse believers of things that they're doing. You know, God does
right.
not say, you know, I'm not going to talk to the devil at all. You know, even Christ had to go out into the wilderness for 40 days and be tempted of the devil. I mean, he still knew what he was going to do when he was going to do it. But he, you know, he went through that whole dialogue process so that we could see how we deal with the situation. So if no other reason, if Barack Obama decides to dialogue with, you know, our enemies on one degree or another and is successful, then at least you have a blueprint to, you know, how you're supposed to deal with something. Because, you know, the world is dynamic, it's always changing. So you always have to look at different ways and different scenarios how to attack certain situations, because, you know, you just, the playbook is always changing based on situations. So I think, you know, I believe when he says he wants to be able to dialogue with our quote-unquote enemies, it's just him being pragmatic and saying, I'm going to leave all options on the table. I'm not going to just box myself in and say what I'm not going to do and won't do.
Well, yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. And I think we're all smart people. We're all really smart people. But they're saying in the chat room that it should at least be a negotiation. However, always negotiate from a place of strength. Well, yeah, if George Bush would have followed that, followed what Colin Powell says, let's go in, blaze them up with more troops and more manpower. We get in, fight, win, and get out. So I can't agree with you that America is willing to negotiate or act from a position of strength, because if we had, and had we followed Colin Powell, we wouldn't be in this quagmire that we're in right now called all these wars costing us all of this money and putting us billions of dollars in debt and running up this humongous deficit. We're down to the last 2 minutes of the show. Thank you to everyone who has tuned in. Join us every single week for our life study, Ecclesia Bible study. For those of you who may not be familiar with what an Ecclesia Bible study is or who Dewan Kolion is, please log on to www.ekklesiaatl.blogspot.com. Shout out to everybody that joined us in the chat room. We had a very full chat room today and a very full show. To Annie, Tiff, True, Hyro, Dropping Seed, and all of the guests that listened in today, thank you very much for tuning in to this show. We do this every single Thursday from 12 to 1. I'm on the air Monday through Friday at the same time, 12 noon, but on Thursdays is when we talk about our life and the Lord and really try to grow and make us all better us's, as I always say. Dee, would you like to give a final thought for us?
You know, you always got to explore truth. You know, don't let people tell you what you can't do or what you should believe or what you should follow. Always go and explore the truth for yourself so you can have your own conviction. Because I'm sure I was watching The View yesterday, and Vernon Jones Jordan actually had advised Barack Obama, don't even run for president.
Mm-hmm.
And he listened to him, but he didn't let that sway whether he was going to do a run or not, because he knew deep down what his convictions are. So the whole, you know, thing about Barack Obama and him being a Christian and what does that mean spiritually, you have to derive that on your own through your own study so that you can have your own convictions and not necessarily follow the talking points that everybody else will want you to believe based on their own hidden agenda.
Yeah, I did actually watch that with Vernon Jordan yesterday, and, you know, he did tell him not to run, and I'm happy that Barack Obama didn't listen, because he told him, you're running against the Clinton machine, you're running against powers that are going to be very hard for you to overtake, and I don't know if you can win. And I'm very happy as well that Barack Obama did not listen and that he did go off on his own. Dee, did I lose you?
Hello?
Dee, did I lose you? Hello?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, I thought I lost you.
No.
I was just saying that I just want to tell everybody, give our closing prayer. I love you all for listening, and I'll see you all tomorrow at 12 noon. The light of God surrounds us. The love of God enfolds us. The power of God protects us. The presence of God watches over us. Wherever I am, God is, and wherever you are, God is. Thanks, God, and so it is, and I'll see everybody tomorrow. Peace.
Yeah.